But now this underground network that Singlob tapped into, as we will see, is a network that has been long in existence and has been holding a lot of other major players. And Singlob himself has been connected, and now we're going to introduce a few more names with Singlob.
Now, one of the major names that we should come to familiarize ourselves with regard to the interrelationship between the arms and drug trade, and in turn the CIA's sponsorship of both arms and drugs in under the auspices of official U.S. government operations. Now, one of the names that we should know in connection with this is a guy named Robert Vesco, a fellow who's been connected with a number of scandals in the past, and as it turns out, one of the scandals that he should have been connected with has not been, at least in terms of most of the mainstream press, concerns drug smuggling. That drug smuggling on behalf, apparently, of the United States government, or in cahoots with it, and in turn, the interrelationship, as we've seen so often, between drug smuggling and arms smuggling. And one of the names that we're going to look at in connection with Robert Vesco was a fellow named Mitchell Werbel.
Indeed. We're going to read now, again, from The Great Heroin Coup by Henrik Krueger. And this is from a chapter entitled Guns for Drugs, which, in fact, is our theme tonight, as you can tell. In August 1976, Lucien Conein, C-O-N-E-I-N, Lucien Conein's chum, Mitch Werbel III, whose B.R. Fox company had shared a Washington office with Conein's DEA Special Operations Group, was brought before a Miami federal court on charges of conspiracy to smuggle 50,000 pounds of marijuana a month from Colombia to the United States. He and several co-conspirators had allegedly hatched the plot in the summer of 1975, just when Alberto Cecilia Falcone, and I will put that in parenthetically, this is the series of articles that we read a little earlier in the broadcast, just when Alberto Cecilia Falcone was arrested in Mexico. Multi-ton marijuana loads were to have been flown from Colombia to an isolated ranch in the Florida Everglades near the cow town of Okeechobee. The star prosecution witness was one of Werbel's close associates, the convicted cocaine and marijuana smuggler Kenneth Gordon Bernstein. However, weeks before his scheduled court appearance, he died in the mysterious crash of his P-51 Mustang at an air show. Most of the vital tape recordings and films of meetings between Bernstein and Werbel and other defendants were no longer producible in court. Werbel's defense was that his role in the plot had been as undercover agent for Conein. Both Conein and Eagle Crow, by the way, was a Nixon staffer, if you don't remember, who was one of the casualties of the Watergate affair. Both Conein and Eagle Crow were to have been witnesses on his behalf, but Crow testified that he didn't know Werbel had worked for the DEA's Special Operations Branch, and Conein wasn't called at all. Another defense witness was the soldier of fortune Jerry Hemming, whose private army of Cuban exiles and Americans, the International Penetration Force, appears, from Hemming's description of its missions, to have played an active role in Operation 40. During the trial, Hemming would stay late into the night in Werbel's hotel room. Werbel was found innocent and released, just like the Thai opium smuggler / CIA agent Puttaporn Kramkwan before him in 1973. He went home to Georgia to pursue his weapons business and law enforcement training camp. According to writer Hank Messick, in 1978 he was involved in far-right politics with the likes of Major General John K. Singlob, who had been relieved of his command in Korea after outspoken criticism of President Carter, and members of the American Security Council, the key U.S. link to the far-right's international umbrella organization, the World Anti-Communist League, dubbed WACL. As reported recently in the New York Times, the beneficiaries of his anti-terrorist training have included members of the far-right anti-Semitic U.S. Labor Party. Another significant group.
It's, by the way, run by Lyndon LaRouche, right. A name that's familiar with all of us.
Werbel owns 8 companies, most of them dealing in firearms used by law enforcement and intelligence units. One of the firm's studies in the operational negation of insurgents and counter-subversion, otherwise known by its acronym PSYONIX, specializes in the production of M10 and M11 silenced machine pistols. The latter two weapons, designed by Gordon Ingram and Werbel, are about the ultimate weapons for terror and extermination. Their sales agent was Werbel's Military Armament Corporation. Together with the anti-Castro Cuban arms dealers Anselmo Allegro and the mercenary Jerry Hemming, Werbel founded the Parabellum Corporation in 1971 in Miami. Parabellum was licensed to sell arms in Latin America. It was also the firm from which Watergate burglar Frank Sturgis plan to obtain weapons for Cuban exiles who were going to, but eventually did not, disrupt the 1972 Miami presidential conventions.
Continuing with Kruger's account. In 1974, Werbel, according to a motion filed by his own lawyer when Werbel, his son, and his company, Defense Services Incorporated, were charged with illicit weapon sales, was involved in a, quote, conspiracy among the CIA, Robert Vesco, and various corporations to finance clandestine guerrilla activities in Latin America, unquote. Vesco wanted to purchase Werbel's stock of 2,000 silenced M10 machine pistols. When Werbel failed to secure an export license, he devised a plan to smuggle the weapons to Vesco. The two later negotiated the construction of a factory in Costa Rica, which would be licensed to fabricate the pistols. Intriguingly, in that same period, someone was negotiating with a U.S. firm for rights to fabricate, in Mexico, fully automatic weapons for clandestine guerrilla actions in Latin America. That someone was Mexico's Cuban exile heroin czar Alberto Cecilia Falcón, and among the weapons he was inspecting was the Ingram M10 9mm Parabellum. Although the M10 and M11 could be acquired legally only with the special permission of U.S. officials, large numbers of silenced M10s turned up in the hands of European fascist terrorists in 1976 and 7, when Pierluigi Concuccelli, a leader of the Italian terrorist group Ordine Nuovo, was arrested in Rome in February of 1977. Why don't you continue reading here, Nip?
Okay. When Pierluigi Concuccelli, a leader of the Italian terrorist group Ordine Nuovo, was arrested in Rome in February of 1977, police found in his apartment the silenced M10, which he had used to murder the Rome magistrate Vittorio Occorsio. Occorsio had been shot down on the streets of Rome in July 1976 after announcing he would expose the close collaboration between fascist terror groups and the mafia. However, it was among Spanish terrorists in particular that Werbel's machine pistols appeared in quantity. Most notably, a sizable consignment of M10s, sent to Spain under license from U.S. authorities, had been purchased by the Spanish intelligence agency DGS, which has allegedly coordinated the actions of fascist terrorists. The fugitive IOS billionaire Vesco, of course, Robert Vesco again, employed a large contingent of Cuban exiles in his Costa Rica sanctuary. Moreover, his weapons negotiations coincided with the efforts of the fanatic anti-Castro Cuban leader Orlando Bosch to assemble Cuban exile groups into an army of terror, CORU, C-O-R-U, that would later carry out assassinations and other dirty work for several Latin American regimes. During Bosch's 1974-75 drive, a wave of murder struck Miami's Cuban exile haven. Most victims had been opposed to Bosch. With the obstacles to his plan removed, CORU was established in June 1976. While Vesco and Werbel were hatching their weapons deal, Bosch's base of operation just happened to be Vesco's Kingdom of Costa Rica. And mafia heroin boss Santo Traficante Jr. was also reportedly there between January 1974 and the summer of 75. Journalist Jim Hogan speculates in his book Spooks that the three might have joined forces in a CIA conspiracy to escalate anti-communist terror in Latin America.
Continuing. In 1973, some of the details began to surface in a series of scandals linking these individuals. That is to say, Santo Traficante, Mitch Werbel, and Robert Vesco. There are a lot of names in this chapter, so those are the three to keep track of here. Again, in 1973, some of the details began to surface in a series of scandals linking these individuals. DEA undercover agent Frank Peroff charged Vesco with financing extensive heroin smuggling. For his initiative, Peroff was fired summarily and his life was threatened. Before the Senate Investigation Subcommittee could probe deeply, the case was squelched through the intervention of the White House. The Oval Office had already helped Vesco, a friend of the Nixon family, in his run-in with the Securities and Exchange Commission, which had sought his prosecution for the trail of swindle he had left in the world of international finance. Midway through the subcommittee investigation of the heroin charges, the DEA announced the disappearance of its Vesco file. 1 year later, as the subcommittee investigated Werbel's weapons deal with Vesco, it learned that Vesco had once employed government narcotics agents. In 1972, two bugging specialists from the BNDD flew from Los Angeles to New Jersey to sweep Vesco's home and office of surveillance devices. According to the subcommittee, the sweeping tour had been arranged by an admitted friend of Vesco's, who was also involved in supplying the fugitive with 2,000 machine guns and helping him establish a factory for the weapons in Costa Rica. Guess who? And interjecting, of course, the guess who they're talking about is Mitch Werbel. That was not the last heard of Robert Vesco in connection with drugs. In the summer of 1977, police uncovered the smuggling of large quantities of heroin and cocaine to Rhode Island. In one of the involved ships, they discovered a ledger in which it was written, quote, to Vesco, $6 million he picked up with Shrimper Lansky, courier beaten up. Several things point to Vesco's involvement in the long-standing partnership of the CIA, the Lansky Traficante Syndicate, and the Cuban exiles in a drugs for guns for terror deal to step up armed suppression and anti-communism in Latin America. Journalist Hogan ventures that the conspirators might have used such go-betweens and couriers as the beautiful Patricia Richardson Martinson. According to her ex-husband, the former Army intelligence agent William Spector, Ms. Martinson had very close relationships with almost everyone of importance in the drug business. Youssef Bedas, the Lebanese founder and managing director of Intrabank, known as one of the major financiers of the heroin traffic. Paul-Louis Weiler, W-E-I-L-L-E-R, a French financier similarly alleged to be behind the narcotics trade. Eduardo Barudi, B-A-R-O-U-D-I, a big-time heroin and gun smuggler suspected of having arranged Bedas' mysterious death in Switzerland. Christian Beausers David, Conrad Bouchard, B-O-U-C-H-A-R-D, a top heroin trafficker heavily involved in Frank Peroff's Vesco heroin allegations, and Marcel Bouquin, B-O-U-C-A-N, the skipper of the Caprice du Temps, which was seized in 1972 with 425 kilos of pure heroin.
Continuing. Yet another likely intermediary among the apparent conspirators is the CIA contract agent slash arms dealer slash art dealer Fernand Legros. In 1971, the CIA helped get Vesco released from San Antoine prison in Geneva, where he had been arrested in the Bernard Kornfeld Investors Overseas Service case. Legros was in that same position, in that same prison, and spoke with Vesco. In January 1973, the two were reunited in Nassau. Legros was seen in the company of Bedas in Geneva and Rio de Janeiro. His closest friend was the convicted heroin trafficker André Labaye, a close associate of Haiti's Duvalier dynasty. In Geneva, Legros also met frequently with Eveline Hirsch, the wife of the imprisoned bankroller André Hirsch, whose South American heroin contact had been Christian David. Just as the U.S. put the screws on the Paraguayan government for the extradition of Auguste Ricord, Legros was in Paraguay to close out a weapons deal with President Stroessner. Later, when Legros was placed in protective confinement in Brazil, newspapers speculated on his involvement in the David mob's narcotics deals. Recent years' investigations into the CIA organized crime connection have resulted in an epidemic of sudden deaths. In the CIA, DEA, Vesco syndicate scheme alone, one can mention Kenny Bernstein, Werbel Associate Colonel Robert F. Bayard, who was shot down in an Atlanta parking lot in July 75, another Werbel Associate and co-defendant in his marijuana case, John Nardi, who was shot in Cleveland, and Vesco's security chief, Bobby Hall, who was shot to death in his Los Angeles home in July 1976. After the Senate Investigation Subcommittee's attempted probe into the Vesco heroin case was sabotaged from the highest quarters, Committee Chairman Henry Jackson asked, quote, did the U.S. government wish to keep Vesco out of this country for some reason? Did he have some special information which he could supply to explain, in part, the national nightmare we have just lived through? One Senate investigator offered an answer, quote, more than any single person, Vesco has information which, if he talked, would make Watergate look like a picnic.
Now, the point is here that Mitchell Werbel, when he was arrested for arms smuggling, as he was arrested earlier for alleged drug smuggling, said that basically he was involved in a cooperative effort with Robert Vesco and the CIA to finance anti-communist activities in Latin America. As indicated here, Robert Vesco was very much involved with attempting to manufacture Mitch Werbel's automatic weapons in Costa Rica, and Robert Vesco was also heavily involved in the narcotics traffic, according to accounts here. And as indicated, Author Jim Hogan, in his book Spooks, has speculated, and his speculation appears to have considerable merit, that Santos Trafficante, Mitch Werbel, and Robert Vesco were involved in using the proceeds from the drug trade to finance the arms trade and in turn to finance anti-communist death squad activity in Latin America. The use of the narcotics trade to finance death squads and the parallel police in Latin America and elsewhere is one of the things we're going to focus on in our third program in our projected four-part series dealing with the interrelationship between the CIA, the narcotics trade, and, the interrelationship between the two. Now, this coming Sunday evening, for those people who are taping this or are listening to this program live, from 8 to 11, we're going to present sort of a mini Radio Free America about Irangate and Contragate. And for those people who eventually hear this by tape, that program will be available. It will go into the permanent archives as sort of a sub Radio Free America. You can call it Radio Free America 25A. It'll be a One Step Beyond show among the miscellaneous shows available. It'll be called Contragate and Irangate. And the Robert Vesco connections will be cropping up in the background of that. Several of the people mentioned, now being mentioned in connection with Contragate and Irangate, crop up in connection with Robert Vesco, Investors Overseas Services, and that scandal. We'll be coming back to Vesco, reviewing the material presented here, and talking about some of the new developments in Contragate and Irangate on Sunday evening. That will be available under the title of Contragate Irangate for the benefit of people who eventually hear this by tape.
And indeed, with that, we are going to wrap it up for this evening. So before we go, actually I'm going to have Dave give the address for DavCorp, so those of you out there who are listening and would like to get these tapes and have been unable to tape it yourself will be able to get just that.
Okay, now, the name of the company that stocks all of our Radio Free America shows, they also have our Guns of November programs on file, also a number of different miscellaneous One Step Beyond shows. The name of that company is called DavCorp, spelled D-A-V as in Victor, K-O-R-E. They're located at Suite 1300D, as in DavCorp, Space Park Way. Three words just like it sounds, Space Park Way. That's in Mountain View, California, zip code 94043. The phone number is 415-969-3030. Write or phone to the attention of Paul. Once again, that's DavCorp, Suite 1300D, Space Park Way, Mountain View, California, 94043. The phone number is area code 415-969-3030. Write or phone to the attention of Paul. And please be advised that neither myself nor NIP nor the station makes a dime off of that.
That's right. And again, we'd like to stress to you that those of you who can, by all means, tune in this Sunday. The seedlings that we have been planting over the years, and that as you've seen some of them back as recently as May in our broadcast then, and some of them going way back to when we first started this broadcast during the Carter administration, these seedlings are beginning to bear some very strange, but for an infrequent chance, some very public fruit. So we hope you will stick with us. We're going to be putting a lot of emphasis on this stuff this Sunday and beginning to tie some of these Radio Free America archive broadcasts into the current situation even more closely. So be there for that. With that, we are going to put it on the road, and we hope you will all join us then. Thank you for being with us, and we will see you when we return on Sundays, of course, with One Step Beyond and with more Radio Free Americas right here. Broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC, Los Altos Hills.